magazines are, you know, a one true love of my life, really. I've been clutching on to Sealed Sections and Total Girls and magazines that are, you know, hyper Barbie pink for forever and ever. And as I got a bit older, I definitely fell into independent publishing in a nice way. So when the opportunity to chat to our next guests came across my desk, I couldn't help myself. I'm a big fan of Un Magazine, and I'm very excited to hear about their new project. They stopped by Artbeat, Baha said, and then a little bit of a chat happened all about a reading group that they put on. It was all about Females, which was a book by Andrea Longshu. So if you caught that chat, you're very lucky and you might have a little bit of awareness of Un Magazine. But they are releasing a new mag. It's coming out this Saturday and it's pretty exciting. They're an independent contemporary art magazine published biannually. It's printed in Nam, Melbourne, Australia, distributed to art organisations, galleries, education institutions around Australia, and to selected outlets internationally as well. So it's all over the place. But they've got a big online presence too. They've been published since 2004, and it was founded by Lily Hibbard. But in 2023, two issues of Un Magazine will be guest edited by Baha Sayed and Gemma Weston. Gemma Weston's going to join us in just a moment, but they've got a couple of contributors going on too. It's Resist. There's two issues coming out this year as part of the 17th release from Un Magazine, Resist and Return. For Resist, they talk about contributions that explore the ways that resistance can be enacted and understood through the artistic, cultural, conceptual and political. What forces urge resistance? How can we think about it? And then how can we use that in creative method, theory, practice, protest? It's all sorts, and it's very exciting. I'm very excited to be joined by Maima Awada and Gemma Weston. Good morning.
Hello.
How are you?
Good morning.
Sorry to surprise you with the headphone approach there. How are you both this morning? Thanks for coming in.
No, thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's beautiful to have you. I'm glad you've made it into the station so we can have a little chat. This magazine's pretty exciting, and you know, I'm an independent publishing lover, so it's definitely not hard for me to want to talk about this. Gemma, why did you want to get involved with this publication? You're a guest editor on this issue, right? How did you get involved?
I am, but I am also a member of the Un editorial committee. So I've been sort of reviewing submissions with my co-committee members for a couple of years. And I was also the first piece of writing that I ever published was actually in Un Magazine, I think, back in 2010, which was actually the same for Baha as well. We both started our kind of arts writing journey with this publication. So to be invited back as editors was a really special moment.
That's pretty special, yeah. Maima, you're involved as a contributor on this issue and you're reading at the event that's happening a little later in the week. We'll talk about the contributions a little later. Why did you want to submit to Un Magazine? What made it a draw card or exciting for you?
To be perfectly honest, initially I was not really looking to participate. Gemma actually reached out to me with an invitation to contribute to the magazine, given that we had done some work previously that looked at writing and arts writing specifically, and kind of knowing a little bit about the legacy of Un Magazine, I felt like very impostery and didn't really feel like I belonged and wanted to contribute. However, before I kind of gave my final response to Gemma regarding whether I was keen to participate, I actually attended a Death Cafe event, and it was this sort of weirdly bizarre, like celestial coincidence, I guess, where this theme kind of kept appearing in my life. And because of that experience, and because of, I guess, the exhibition that I had in mind to respond to through the magazine, that actually felt like a perfect opportunity to amalgamate those experiences. So that is actually what kind of pushed me to contribute.
Well, it's exciting that, you know, sometimes imposter syndrome really does take over, and especially in spaces that, you know, you love and adore, sometimes it's hard to feel that you can be accepted into that space. But to come at it from that angle and really, like, you know, feel supported and involved in the application process, and then move into a spot where you do put something forwards and it gets accepted, and now you're a part of it, and now you're a part of this wonderful issue. Resist came about as a part of a two-part theme. So it's the 17th release from Un Magazine, and it's 17 semicolon one and 17 semicolon two, right?
Yes.
So there's two situations going on. Resist and Return as the themes. Why did they come about? Why were they the focus for this release?
I think, but something that Bahar and I speak about a lot is the how to kind of quantify the instinctual response that you have to creative practice, either as a maker or as an audience member. And often that there's this sort of pull or a push against, or these feelings that are hard to, that are then, as part of arts writing, are is the process of putting those feelings into words. So we spent some time thinking about these two, I suppose, opposing directions. So Resist feels like pushing back against something, and Return feels like to be drawn towards something. And we also thought that with those two words, two kind of beautiful symmetrical R sounds, there was enough, I think, breadth and depth for a really broad range of contributors to respond to, and to also contain some of the really kind of urgent discussions in arts practice at the time. So it was a way to both focus and to broaden out, and also to help people to think through some of those, I suppose, the more cosmic moments where you feel pulled to do something, to articulate that in words.
In terms of the contributions and what's come together for the actual issue, how is it looking and how has it come to be in response to those themes? What kind of things have arisen in terms of contributions?
It's interesting. There's some definite... So I should, as Mamie mentioned, there's a some of the contributions are commissions, and some are from a call-out. So there's a balance of sort of invited guests and then people responding to the call-out text. Well, what we found in the... There's a few things that are really very prominent. Obviously, people are very, very, very much thinking about land back and resistance to colonial violence in the arts industry and beyond. Lots of submissions were about conversations and collaboration, so people wanting to interview or to think through collaborative and creative practice as a form of resistance. There was also a lot of interest in institutional critique, as well as speaking back to the organisations in the arts world that display art and the ways to improve or kind of critique their practice as well. A couple of occasions where we had to talk to some lawyers, which is a bit spicy, but it's a really good, broad, and I think meaty selection of texts.
That's pretty exciting. I guess in yourself and in the work that you do, do you find that, you know, resistance to arts institution that maybe was founded by white colonial and patriarchal frameworks of governance, do you think that perspective from within there is possible? That's one of the prompts that I know you put forward for a Resist thing, but for yourself, in responding to that, do you feel that pressure when creating and existing within the arts?
I'm a white settler working in an arts organisation, so it's something that's top of mind. I like to hope that it's possible, and I think that the increase in consciousness and also in audiences holding organisations to account is a really positive thing. And so I think with listening from within organisations, yes, but I also think because of the way that organisations are, it'll be a slow and incremental process where we'll get a lot of things wrong, I think, along the way. But I think there's definitely a willingness at the moment that's exciting to push against.
I think that pushing against something that, you know, that feels oppositional or feels like a force for change, then does usually result in the creation of something new or the generation of a space that needed to be there or needed to be occupied in a good way, you know, in the correct way.
Yeah, and I think we were really conscious, both Bahar and I were really conscious that the issue focused specifically on arts practice and the arts sector, in that this is, and we've been feeling the anxiety of doing justice to this word and everything that it means, particularly once it's isolated from Return like this, that it'd be focused on creative practice and creative work as the place in which those practices manifest. I don't want to confuse necessarily political action and artistic practice. I know that there's intersections, but we're also very aware of the limitations of the medium.
Yeah, the artistic practice is the focus here, and definitely what's coming from that. One of the other prompts you had, which I really loved and I have stolen as a question to prompt you with, was, does resistance require rejection? And I guess you sort of touched on a little bit of that change and that sort of, you know, pressing on something to look at it. But what are your thoughts on that kind of question?
Well, so resist, we came back and forth about whether the second word was reject or resist. Mm-hmm. And so that the idea that the difference between those two things was that we thought the resistance, you could resist whilst holding on to something, while rejection was really about a kind of a negative, a kind of disavowal of something. So I think a lot of the ways that our contributors are thinking through resistance is about holding on to cultural practice and about holding on to holding on to traditions, even as you might interrogate some of the legacy of those traditions. So I think in both of the issues of the magazine, we're really aware that these two words play out simultaneously, that these directions are quite interrelated in some way. Mm. It's a really good question.
It's a good question, and you came up with it, so I stole it. Nice, as a compliment to yourself, you know. So the prompts are really beautiful, and they, you know, you've definitely touched on a lot of different things there. And across the contributions, I can imagine that those expansive things you were just talking about, and the ways that you've approached it, and how broad they've come back, then I can imagine that can only be beautiful. In terms of that developing into the launch and the magazine itself, how are we going to see that in the launch this Saturday? How are we going to see the resist?
Well, I think, I mean, the launch is really is an opportunity for people to come together. So I think often as a writer and even as an editor, you're often working in isolation. You're kind of tied to your laptop on, you know, on Google Drive, kind of feeling like you're feeling through these ideas in solitude. While as the launch is, particularly as well, it's a really kind of West Coast moment for UN. There's a lot of local contributors, and it's a great moment for us all to kind of even honestly to meet each other. There's a few people who we haven't who we know only through email, and so there'll be, I think it'll be quite casual. There'll be drinks, there'll be some snacks, there'll be some readings from contributors. And I think it's just a space to kind of celebrate and talk. I think fun should be a part of resistance as well. You've got to enjoy yourself. I think that's a reason for living.
I think that's a great take. I think, yeah, being fun and aligning that with resistance is something that we're probably not doing enough. So then it's a great idea to have. Maima, you are one of the contributors on the issue. How did you respond to the theme of resist in the work that you created, without, you know, spoiling it or giving anything away if you don't want to? But in terms of your response, how did you go about, you know, creating work that was to fit this question?
Well, like I said previously, I kind of, I guess, was influenced by a recent experience of going to a death cafe, and wanted to use, like, the opportunity to... to be invited to contribute to UN as, like, a platform to explore that idea. I guess in terms of how I've, like, approached the theme, I feel like, as Gemma mentioned, like, there are a lot of texts that kind of respond to institutional critique as, like, a, you know, a form of resistance. And that was definitely something that was top of mind for me, being that, you know, my initial feelings were a little bit of overwhelm in terms of writing something. I feel like I've also kind of, I wanted to explore and write something that looked at how, I guess, art's being something that isn't there to consume, like, creative output isn't necessarily there as something to consume. It's an experience that you can engage with in resonance with your life, and your life and the experiences within that can also resonate with how you're reading particular arts practices. Mm. So.
I think that's pretty, and it's pretty exciting to think about that kind of resonance, and to think about the way that we take in art or observe art rather than maybe thinking about it as a consumption sort of energy. So definitely really exciting. Now, you have brought something that you're going to share with us today, right?
Yes.
A little reading. So what is it that you've brought in, and the piece that you did for Resist, or is it something a little bit different?
No, it is the piece that I wrote for Resist. I thought I would probably just share, like, the beginning excerpt as... as a bit of an introduction, I guess, to what I was writing about, the exhibition that I'm actually referring to is However Vast the Darkness, which was at Drumcurtain Gallery showing in March. It's actually a collection of exhibitions from Lisa Rayana, Aziz Hazara and Proper Now. Like I said, it's actually mostly revolving around my experience of going to this particular event, being the Death Cafe, and then wanting to look at that experience as like a medium through which to explore, an exhibition that I also felt really, really connected to.
Absolutely. All right, well, whenever you're ready, read away. I'm a waiter.
Thinking back to my first visit to However Vast the Darkness at Drumcurtain Gallery in March, I now remember that moment as being unusually bookended by the subject of death. In the months prior to seeing the exhibition, death seemed to be a recurring theme in my life, a sequence that I can only describe as cosmic. It felt fitting then that when I received an email informing me of an upcoming local Death Cafe event, I would take it as an obligation more so than an invitation. The idea of sharing tea with strangers evokes a certain image in my mind's eye, a glassy, sunlit room where drab conversational niceties are exchanged. A death cafe isn't quite this, although the sharing of tea with strangers is a commonality. The impetus is the universal and imminent reality of death, a provocation for participants to divulge their hopes and fears relating to their own passing. Having had no prior experience with partaking in such an event, I mostly engaged with little expectation. Aside from this possibly celestial calling, my intention with attending was to perform a kind of civic responsibility. I wouldn't consider myself to be an especially spiritual person. However, the Muslim teachings learnt from my father have instilled in me a dutifulness to think about what it means to be a good ancestor, to think about how I can show up in the world with care and consciousness. In Western culture, where the duty of caring for vulnerable people has been largely outsourced to health professionals trained under the watchful eye of the institution, what space is there left to hold, listen, and grieve between one body and another, let alone as a community? My participation in the Death Cafe was in this way an opportunity for me to renew my power as an active citizen.
Thanks so much, Maima. That was a reading from UN Magazine, their Resist issue, coming out this Saturday as a part of two releases that are going to be happening. And we heard from Maima Awada.
Perfect.
I'm going to get it. I'm sorry. But, you know, saying the name right, it's important. You can't just throw it under the rug. It's important to get it right. You can catch that launch on Saturday. It's very exciting. There's going to be other readings. Maima's going to be down there sharing. It's going to be a beautiful time. Gemma, what else can people expect when they head to the launch? What else do they need to know if they want to get down there?
So the launch is at Sweet Pea Gallery, which is on Pier Street in the city, within the free transit zone and walking distance from a train station.
There you go. Important.
It is Tima Ball will also be reading her piece, which is just this phenomenal creative text. Tima's one of, I think, Australia's kind of best essayists at the moment, but she's also a creative writer. She's written a piece that really lampoons the white expectations of Aboriginal artists. And Joanna Partica's reading as well. So Joanna's been very prominent in at the moment with her Disrupt Barrett Pub action. So the magazine for us was an opportunity to preserve some of the writing that she'd been doing around that project. So she'll be reading as well. Bahar and I will be there. Patrick William Carter's exhibition. It's the last day of that at Sweet Pea, so a really good opportunity to check that out as well. And just hopefully stand around, have a chat and have an meet some people.
Gorgeous.
Have a great time.
Yeah, have a great time. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate you joining me on Breakfast. It's my third show. It's going okay.
Congratulations.
But I really appreciate you making the time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Pam.